Hello and welcome to South Asia Chart, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Dr. Chulani Attanayaka, a visiting research fellow at ISAS. And with me is Dr. Palitha Kohuna. Dr. Kohuna is the new Sri Lankan ambassador to China. He was the secretary to Ministry of Foreign Affairs between 2006 and 2009. He served as the permanent representative of Sri Lanka to the United Nations in New York from 2009 to 2015. During his tenure at the UN, he has chaired and co-chaired multiple working groups and committees, including the UN Working Group on Biological Diversity Beyond National Jurisdiction and UN Committee on Israeli Practices in the Occupied Arab Territories. He was also the chairman of the UN General Assembly's Sixth Committee Legal in 2014. Previously, he was the Secretary General of the Government Peace Secretariat, during which time he participated in two rounds of peace negotiations with the LTTE in Geneva and led the delegation to a round organized in Oslo. In this episode, we will have a closer look into Sri Lanka's relations with China. Thank you, Ambassador, for joining with us today.
My pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for the last few days.
Thank you. So let's begin with your newest adventure to Beijing. You'll be soon going to Beijing as the new ambassador to China, new Sri Lankan ambassador to China. So what will be your priorities in enhancing Sri Lanka's bilateral ties?
Now, to begin with, let me say categorically that our bilateral ties are very strong. We've been friends not since yesterday, but for over a thousand years. But in more recent times, our relationship has blossomed further, especially during our internal terrorist conflict. China was a major backer. If not for China's support, in my view, it's unlikely that we would have been able to end this conflict in 2009. And China supported us, extended its support, even when our other friends were looking the other way, turning a blind eye and looking the other way. So, and then more recently, when we were desperately looking for investment funding to kickstart our economy after 27 years of lagging behind, it was Chinese investments that helped us greatly. Now we see the results. We've seen new harbors, airports, highways, even railway lines built with Chinese assistance. And then most recently, when COVID-19 began to sweep across the world, China was one of the first countries to extend support to Sri Lanka. And so the bilateral relationship has been very strong. Chairman Lai visited Sri Lanka in the 50s, Mrs. Bandaranaike visited China more than once when she was prime minister. And since then, our leaders have been visiting China. President Xi Jinping himself came to Sri Lanka in 2014. So it's on a very good foundation that our bilateral relationship rests now. My job would be to enhance it further and ensure that it will be a lasting relationship, not a relationship that's convenient to both, but it shouldn't be a relationship of convenience, but something that would be established on a strong foundation to last for a long time. That will be my priority concern. And I don't think there will be too many challenges in that respect, given this high degree of warmth for each other amongst the leaders of the two countries. We also understand that Sri Lanka has treated China as a regional friend and a partner, as well as an inspiration in many respects. So China, on the other hand, has also looked to Sri Lanka for support in critical areas. Sri Lanka has always recognized only one China. We do not in any way support any thinking that China should be anything but one country. We have also extended our support to China in the WHO when others were trying to pinpoint or find fault with China with regard to its response to COVID-19. So it's been a substantive relationship between the two countries based on trust, mutual understanding, and a feeling that we can be beneficial to each other.
So I think it's correct to say that Sri Lanka and China's relationship especially enhanced during previous Rajapaksa administration. How do you see the relationship span out in this Rajapaksa administration? Are there any changes? And what are the aspects that will continue?
I don't think there will be any substantial changes. We would work towards making the relationship stronger, place it on a firmer footing, and ensure that there is mutual understanding. Personally, I don't think there'll be a huge difference between the attitudes of the Mahinda Rajapaksa government and the current government of Gotabaya Rajapaksa. Gotabaya Rajapaksa himself has been a keen visitor to China. He'd been there over 13 times. I myself have gone there even on more occasions than that. So I think I personally don't think there'll be any significant changes in the attitude of Sri Lanka towards China under the Gotabaya Rajapaksa government.
Ambassador, you briefly mentioned about the support China gave during the COVID pandemic to Sri Lanka. Can you elaborate a little bit more for our audience?
When the pandemic began sweeping the world and Sri Lanka itself started taking note of what was happening elsewhere, it was China that came to our assistance first with the equipment required to deal with the pandemic. The testing kits, the masks, the medical garments required, etc. The first shipments came from China. So we are very grateful to China for that. That was at a time when Sri Lanka really didn't know much about the disease. It took us a while to understand it. And the Chinese assistance got us over that first hurdle. In fact, for months and months, Sri Lanka's performance was exemplary. We had only, for the first few months, we had only about 9 or 10 deaths. And the number of people infected were largely those who had returned to Sri Lanka from overseas. Of course, the second wave is claiming more lives and infecting more people at the moment, but still to a much lesser extent than any of our neighbors. So we are doing a great job here. And hopefully the mutual assistance that we extended to each other will continue, which would mean that both of us would also be at a not too distant future date, be able to open our doors to each other. In this context, I have to remind the listeners that China is the biggest or was the biggest source of tourism in the world. 169 million Chinese traveled outside the country in 2019. Sri Lanka's economic future to a large extent rests on reviving our tourism industry. And we would certainly be looking to China to supply the numbers of tourists that we need to revive our industry as well as kickstart our economy again.
Ambassador, let me ask this question with regard to the global changes that happened within the last few weeks. So we saw that the United States administration changed after the election. And for a small country like Sri Lanka, these changes impact directly in our foreign policy. In your opinion, and from your experience as a former foreign secretary and later as a permanent representative to UN for a period of time and have been closely observing the US politics from New York, how do you think the new administration's policies will impact Sri Lanka's foreign policy? And in particular, how will it impact our relationship with China?
First, let me take the first part. A mature country like the United States does not change its foreign policy overnight, nor does it adjust its policies willy-nilly. There is a certain degree of predictability about the foreign policy of the United States. But having said that, there is an expectation that the United States in the future would be less confrontational and more prone to resolve disputes and differences through dialogue and through discussion rather than simply approach the world in a confrontational manner. How would this affect Sri Lanka? Sri Lanka has always considered the US to be a friend, in fact, a long-standing friend. And we've had very warm relations with the United States in recent times. And I don't think that much would change. The United States may, in certain areas, revive its previous positions, but I'm not certain about that because after all, at the end of the day, what is important is for Sri Lanka to be confident about the United States and its policies towards itself. We have categorically stated that we will be non-aligned in our approach to the power blocks of the world. And we know that some very significant powers are competing, jousting for influence in our region. And it will be certainly be a challenge for our foreign service and foreign policymakers chart a course which is non-aligned and non-interventionist. We also expect the rest of the world to abide by the principles of the United Nations and let us determine our future ourselves rather than try to attempt to influence our policymaking. At the end of the day, it's the people of this country who have to decide what is good for them and what is bad for them. And the current government takes that view very strongly that each country must be left to its own devices rather than be subjected to unnecessary pressure from the outside. There's also a way of conveying your concerns to a country, which is traditionally accepted through quiet discussion, quiet persuasion, etc., rather than by using megaphones. And I think at the end of the day, the new administration, which comprises of very mature and experienced persons, will not pose an increased challenge to Sri Lankan policymakers. I think there wouldn't be a specific challenge. And it would be our responsibility to manage our external relations in a way that the country's independence is protected, its integrity is assured, and its freedom of action is not compromised.
Ambassador, Sri Lanka recently saw multiple diplomatic visits by global and regional powers. Earlier, a couple of months ago, there was a visit from a delegation from China, and then it was followed by former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's visit just a couple of days ahead of the U.S. election. And later, India's National Security Advisor Ajit Doval visited Sri Lanka. How these visits are impacting us?
I don't think they are making an unmanageable impact on Sri Lanka. We are, of course, we are delighted that all these dignitaries have chosen to visit Sri Lanka, albeit in the case of some as part of wider regional visits. But it's for Sri Lanka, it's a good thing that they're all paying attention to Sri Lanka. We didn't enjoy being ignored for some time, but now at least we are attracting the attention of the bigger players in the region, some of them not our immediate neighbors, distant neighbors, but nevertheless, it's a sign that Sri Lanka is considered by them to be an important entity in the world stage. And I think that is it's by itself is a positive development. It won't simply be a one-way flow of ideas and influences. Sri Lanka can use those and has used those visits to express its own views and to try and influence the visitors who so kindly thought it useful to come with us. I think at the end of the day, these visits should be considered to be in a positive light, and that they are, and that we should manage those visits in such a way that they benefit Sri Lanka rather than do something else. And I'm sure that given the experience of our policymakers and their own approaches to the world, that we could turn these visits to our advantage. I'm also confident that these countries would have expressed their own views, and I was party to at least one of those meetings. And of course, we will take those views into account, but not necessarily be pushed off our own positions because of that. As Gandhi once said, let the thoughts of the world come and swirl freely in our house, but we refuse to be blown away by them.
I understand that you look at this in a very positive light. So let me probe a little bit more into this. There are also arguments that such attention also create difficulties or challenges for Sri Lanka. More recently, there was a dispute in the mainstream media between the U.S. ambassador to Sri Lanka and the Chinese envoy to Sri Lanka over some remarks both parties made in their own interviews. So even though Sri Lanka tries to maintain a balance, inevitably we are getting dragged into a conflict that we don't want to get to be involved. How do you think Sri Lanka should navigate a situation like this?
We did notice the exchange that took place, but there's no need to conclude that we are going to get dragged into that sort of debate or conflict even, because it's from our neighbors, our friends, to sort out their differences amongst themselves. In many of these instances, we have no role to play. For us, it's unfortunate that our friends are quibbling with each other. But in the world, that is inevitable. There are countries with their own interests to protect and advance. The important thing is for Sri Lanka not to get entangled in these power struggles, if you could describe them in those terms. And again, let me emphasize that we have a mature leadership with a good understanding of the world. And for us, what is important is our own independence, our own sovereignty, and our own security. We do not need to get involved in others' struggles for influence or dominance. We will manage our own affairs in the best way to suit our needs. So I personally don't think that we are getting dragged into others' conflicts or or to their contentious situations, we will just sit out and watch how everything pans out.
Finally, let me ask about Sri Lanka's India first policy when it comes to India's security concerns. So recently, Sri Lanka categorically mentioned that the government will give priority to India's concerns when it comes to security matters. So I think India-Maldives-Sri Lanka trilateral security dialogue is an extension to this. How would this impact Sri Lanka's ties with China? Because it looks like India's major security concern vis-a-vis Sri Lanka has links with our ties with China.
That statement made a couple of months ago has been clarified. I think it was a case of using terminology out of context. Now, it has been categorically stated that our priority is Sri Lanka. Our policy approach is Sri Lanka first and not any other country first, including India. And of course, when you say that, our policy approach is based on Sri Lanka first. We are also conscious that our neighbor, friend, and long standing inspiration in various aspects, India. India has legitimate security concerns in the region. It's a regional power. And Sri Lanka's approach is that Sri Lanka will not pose a security threat to India, nor will it allow any other country to use Sri Lanka to pose a security threat to India. And this position is perfectly clear. And I don't think any other country, including China, will misunderstand that, because we are only 22 miles off the coast of India. We are very close neighbors, proximate neighbors in more ways than one. And therefore, India's security is very important to us. And similarly, Sri Lanka's security is important to India. If Sri Lanka is destabilized, it will be only a matter of time before any destabilization occurring here will have an impact on India. So it's a mutual concern. We will ensure that Sri Lanka poses no security threat to India. And I'm sure that India will also want to ensure that Sri Lanka's stability and internal peace is maintained. And in that respect, again, we have to remember that in 2009, India did extend considerable assistance to Sri Lanka to eliminate the terrorist threat in this country. So in the future too, I'm sure that the two countries will maintain a balance in their relationship, which will not pose a threat to each other. And at the same time, understand that Sri Lanka's economic needs need to be satisfied from some source. And Sri Lanka has warmly welcomed Chinese investments in Sri Lanka, just as much as it has invited any other country which is capable of investing in Sri Lanka to come forth and do so. We would like to see the American companies, Indian companies, European companies, Australian, Japanese companies to come and make use of Sri Lanka's geographical location to advance their business interests. We sit in the middle of the Indian Ocean, surrounded by countries, starting from the African continent, the Middle East, India, ASEAN, Australia, and all these countries, until the COVID pandemic hit, were booming. Their economies were growing at a phenomenal pace. And there is this wonderful opportunity for global companies to locate themselves in Sri Lanka and exploit the potential of our geographical location. At the same time, it has to remember that our links with the rest of the world are excellent, whether it's aviation, shipping, telephone links, etc. And it's a very good place to live in. It's a much better place to live in than many other countries, similar sized countries in the world. And then, of course, you have to remember that the busiest sea lane in the world passes within 20 kilometers of our southern coast. So again, that provides huge potential for businesses to operate out of Sri Lanka. So it's not only China that we would like to see entering Sri Lanka for business purposes, but every other country that has that sort of ambition. It's very difficult to find a place in the world which can compete with Sri Lanka for location and other facilities. So I don't think that our economic links with China will pose that much of a concern to India, also remembering that India's biggest export market is China today. And so India finds it comfortable to deal with China. Of course, there are hiccups resulting from recent border skirmishes, but in the long run, we would hope that our neighbors will work together for the common benefit. In fact, if India and China work together, it will not only be India and China who will benefit from it, but also the wider region. Because for us, both are potential investors in our economy and also huge markets for our products. And I would like to see a day when our neighbors get on better with each other so that small countries like Sri Lanka can benefit from the resulting peace and amity.
With that, let me thank you, Ambassador, for joining with us, even though you're occupied getting ready to go for your next assignment.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to talk to you. And I also compliment you on asking some very probing questions. And I hope I satisfied you with my answers.
You did, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dear listeners, we hope you have enjoyed this session. If you are interested to learn more about our analysis and our work, please visit our website, isas.nus.edu.sg. Please stay tuned to South Asia Chart for more analysis on contemporary South Asia.